Hi everyone, good to be here with you again, and thank you for showing up. And that was a lovely song, a nice segue in preparation for this talk. So I'm assuming that you all can hear me. Yes. So, all right, I'm going to be reading from In the World, But Not of It again today. And I'm going to read a passage about disidentifying with thought, because that is such an important thing we need to understand and learn to do. It's so crucial to our peace and to our happiness. Thoughts can and may remain in the thought stream without causing significant obstruction to presence as long as they aren't strongly identified with. The degree of identification with thought is what's key, not so much the number of thoughts. Nevertheless, the number of thoughts in the thought stream diminishes as belief in them does. The less attention given to a thought, the less it's fed. Eventually, it weakens and stops arising altogether. Then the process of clearing accelerates. Since the fewer thoughts there are, the easier it is to disidentify with them, because more presence is available to see through them. Once a lot of presence is available, it would take either a barrage of thoughts or an upsurge of feelings to squeeze out presence. So I think this is very encouraging to know that by not giving our thoughts our attention, we are actually speeding up the process of eliminating those thoughts from the thought stream. The less attention we give them, the less strength they have, and eventually they just fall away. So it's like not giving them your energy disempowers them, and eventually they just won't even arise. The process can take quite a long time, however, as in my experience, it can take quite a long time. So you may have to see a particular thought, who knows, maybe hundreds, maybe thousands of times, see it from a place of noticing it and not engaging with it before it just stops showing up. And I've had that experience where I've noticed my thoughts, noticed a particular set of thoughts over and over and over again for a period of a few years, really. And then one day I realized, oh, I don't think that thought anymore. And I didn't even notice when it stopped appearing, of course, because you don't notice a negative, an absence of something. But all of a sudden, so it seems, all of a sudden you realize it's not there anymore, and it rarely comes up or never comes up again. So there's lots of hope here in making progress with disidentifying with thought, and the key is to not give it your attention. And the easiest way to not give it your attention, of course, is to give your attention to something else. What you give your attention to could be a positive thought. You could make up a positive thought, an affirmation, or use a prayer of some sort that would substitute for focusing on that thought. So that's one way of doing it. That's kind of a bridge into presence, using affirmations or prayers or positive thoughts to neutralize a negative thought or to draw your attention away from a negative thought. That works quite well, but it's also possible to, as I've spoken about before, to simply turn your attention away from the world of thoughts, the imaginary virtual reality of the mind, into the present moment, into reality, which is essentially a sensory experience. So you turn your attention to what you are seeing, hearing, feeling, experiencing through your body, mind, here and now, in the present moment. So you move out of the virtual reality. And this is quite something to see too, that we even have a virtual reality. And I think it's great that we have this language, because it helps to point out that there is a mental realm that seems very real, but which is clearly not real, just like movies are not real, although they seem real. Our thoughts are not real. They don't actually create a solid reality that has any kind of existence outside of our own head. So it's truly a mental, inner, made-up world that our minds are so good at creating. It's important to recognize that. So that is the work of the spiritual path, is moving out of this illusion. It's an illusory world. This virtual reality is the illusion. We move out of it by giving our attention instead to what is real, with a capital R. What is real? And that includes sights and sounds and sensations, but it also includes intuitions and more subtle sensing of presence, of the heart, of inspiration, of love, peace, joy, the subtle experience of presence as it manifests in every moment. It's always there, but the noisy mind overshadows this more subtle means of communication of our true self, of presence, the subtle joy, inspiration, intuition, compassion and love and peace and wisdom of our true nature. Identification is a measure of how much you believe a thought. For instance, if you had the thought, "I want a pink elephant," you wouldn't identify with it because it's so unbelievable. The reason thoughts like that don't generally arise in the first place is because they wouldn't be believed. The thoughts in your thought stream are ones you believe to some extent, or they wouldn't arise. And I think that's a very important point. You don't have just any thought running through your head. The ones that run through your head are thoughts that you believe to some extent, or that you've been taught to believe to some extent. Identification is a process of taking on certain beliefs as your own, as belonging to the imaginary you. These beliefs, in turn, create and maintain this false imaginary self. Your particular beliefs produce feelings, desires, and drives, which result in actions that shape and maintain a particular identity. The more strongly you believe a thought or desire, the more power it has to shape your life. So this is how our false identities are created. It starts with a thought. I'm unworthy, or I'm not good enough, or I'm unhappy, or I can't do it. It starts with a thought about yourself. And then those thoughts invariably, if they're entertained long enough, they create feelings. Negative feelings usually, because the thought stream generated by the ego is generally negative and about limitation and fear. So negative feelings are created when you entertain those thoughts. When you believe a thought strongly enough, then feelings are generated. And then in order to do something about those feelings, desires and drives are created. Because if I feel that I'm imperfect or not good enough, I'm going to come up with a desire, which is another thought, about how I can fix that. If I'm not good enough, well, maybe if I work out 45 minutes a day, so then I have a desire to be good enough, and that creates a drive in me to work out or try to become rich or try to become beautiful or do whatever the other thoughts tell you you need to do in order to overcome the feelings that were created. So the drives then result in actions. So if I'm spending 45 minutes a day at the gym, that's 45 minutes a day that's shaping my life. It's shaping my day. And all of these things serve to maintain a particular identity. But they don't really solve the so-called problem of the belief in the first place. Because the truth is, those beliefs of I'm not worthy or I need something to be happy will never actually be fulfilled by the desires and drives and actions that are produced by those beliefs. Because when you're in the ego's realm, you will never win. You will never be good enough. You'll never be thin enough or in shape enough or rich enough or beautiful enough. Once you attain a certain level of that, the ego ups the ante and requires that you become even more, or that you gain success in some other area and dangles the carrot of happiness in front of you once again. But you never reach the ego's happiness because it's based on a false premise that you will be happy when you get something outside yourself. The problem with your thoughts, beliefs, and egoic desires is that the false self they create is a self that suffers. So this self that desires and believes that happiness is outside itself by achieving certain things is a self that suffers because it doesn't ever achieve what it thinks it needs to be happy. But it's mistaken in thinking that it needs something outside itself to make it happy. So there's no end really to the suffering. To disidentify with your thoughts and stop suffering, the truth about your thoughts has to be seen. Once you see how they cause suffering and only pretend to be useful, you can begin to let go of them. Sure, as long as you think that your thoughts have some truth to them, that they will bring you happiness and that they are a good guide to how to live your life, you're going to keep going down the ego's path and following its instructions, its ideas about how to live your life in order to be happy. When it comes to thoughts, seeing is not believing. In other words, seeing the truth about your thoughts leads to not believing them. So this inquiry into your thoughts is a really critical aspect of how to get free from this thought stream that causes suffering. It's not quite enough to notice your thoughts if you're still believing them. And the way to not believe your thoughts is to investigate them, to inquire into them. You look at them square in the face and say, is that true? Is that true? And unless a thought is completely true throughout time, always, then it isn't true. It's a partial truth. So our thoughts catch us up because they have a little bit of truth in them. For instance, if the belief is, I'll be happy when I have more money, well, there's a little bit of truth in that, and if you are destitute, you certainly will feel much better. But if you have a lot more money, that doesn't mean you're going to be happy forever and ever. So there's a little bit of truth in our beliefs, which keeps us attending to them and following the ego's marching orders. But we have to look and see, is it true that I need that to be happy? Or is it true all the time that I'm not successful or that I'm not good enough? We all fall down. We all are imperfect. We all have flaws. None of us is perfectly excellent in all areas of life. So we can always find ways that we fall short. The question is, are you going to focus on that and tell a story of I'm inadequate, or are you going to notice what else is here? What talents and gifts and abilities and things you have done right are also here? So the ego is always telling a partial truth, and it is ignoring much of the truth. Whereas if we drop into presence, we're able to see a much bigger truth. We're able to see the whole picture. And when we see the whole picture, we don't suffer. So really, suffering comes from believing a lie, and peace comes from believing the whole truth. So we're learning in this work to see more truly and to not be caught in the lies, however tricky they may be, that our thoughts present us with. Let's take a look at how the I thought causes suffering, since this is the core thought. All suffering starts with belief in I. The I, or false self, is the only thing that has desires, preferences, dreams, and fears. It's funny how a thought can have thoughts. Presence, your true self, has none of these. Its only desire is to experience life fully, to drink it in, all of it, even what the false self refuses to embrace. So I is the generator of suffering. Desires, fears, preferences, and all other manner of thoughts set this I up against the world, against life. Without this resistance to life, to however life happens to be showing up, there would be just life, just this. And just this would be okay. But even saying that is inaccurate, since okay is a judgment. Such is the problem with language. Because it's dualistic, it contributes to the very push-pull that defines the I and how it experiences the world. So it's very interesting. Imagine that. Desires, fears, preferences are the only thing that cause us to be unhappy. They cause us to resist life, to resist what is. If we didn't have a desire for it to be different, or a fear about it, or preferences for other than what is, there would be no resistance to life. There would just be a yes, a saying yes to whatever is. It sounds so simple, but those desires and fears and preferences are so built into us that we have to really come to see them for what they are before their power diminishes over us. To be more precise, I isn't actually the problem. When I stands alone and merely points to the fact that you exist and are conscious and aware, that is the true I. The trouble starts with the definitions that come after I, which turn I into the false self. I'm alone. I'll never make it. I'm going to fail at this. I don't know what to do. I give up. These are the stories that create the imaginary self that you think of as yourself. Without these thoughts, you'd simply be I. If all the I thoughts were cleared out of the thought stream or not believed, you would be enlightened, because you'd experience yourself simply as I, or I am, without any definition to it, just pure existence. And that's the truth. That's what you are, pure existence, without a beginning or an end, playing at being a self with a history, desires, fears, preferences, and dreams. You are existence, having a human experience. But of course, those I thoughts probably won't disappear, and you'll still need to use I in speaking with others. What changes with enlightenment is that you know you're not what those thoughts describe, so you're able to hold those thoughts lightly. You don't really believe what the I thoughts say about you. You know they only describe the false self. So let's just sit with that a moment, because this might be quite a revelation. Every single one of your I thoughts, except for I or I am, period, which generally does not come into your thought stream anyway, but all of your thoughts that start with I or refer to I only describe the false self. So how could you possibly need those thoughts if they describe the false self? Do you need the false self? At a certain point in our evolution, we do not need the false self anymore. And of course, if you're listening to these teachings, you are one of those people who is at that point where you are ready to see through the false self and to know yourself as presence. This lightness towards yourself, towards the self described by your thoughts, means you have more choice around those thoughts. You can act on them or not. You can choose which ones will shape your life and which ones won't. That character has to do something. It has to have a life. So naturally, it will live out some of those desires and identify with some of those thoughts to some extent. So we're not really talking about disavowing the false identities so much as just recognizing that they are false and aren't who you really are, but acknowledging that they are an aspect of our human existence and that they will eventually drop away when we hold them lightly. So it's very important to relate to the thoughts in your thought stream with gentleness and compassion for them being part of the human experience that causes suffering. We don't want to go to war with the thoughts in the thought stream. That isn't the relationship that will heal the thoughts in the thought stream, that will weaken them or lessen them. Only a detached acceptance and compassion towards them will weaken them. Because, of course, what we resist persists. And so if we go to battle with our thoughts or judge ourselves for having those thoughts or are unhappy because we're having those thoughts, well, that would just be the spiritual ego judging or being unhappy with what is. So we have to find that place of gentle acceptance and acknowledgement and compassion towards the thought stream that will allow us to drop into presence. Because acceptance and compassion is a quality of presence. And when we evoke those qualities or align with those qualities, we will just naturally become our true self. We will naturally drop into presence, and the ego will not have a grip on us anymore. So holding the false self lightly is a really important step or stage in this process of diminishing the thought stream. We hold it lightly. Ah, yes, there you are again, you thoughts about me, myself, and I, and what I think I need to be happy. Ah, yes, there you are again. And then you can move on to being here now in the present moment reality. On the other hand, if you assume your thoughts describe who you are and what you need to do, you have little choice. You'll be whatever your thoughts say you are and do whatever your thoughts tell you to do. You won't feel you have a choice to pick and choose which thoughts to follow. Then, like most people, you'll be tossed to and fro by whatever thought happens to pop in your mind. And that is pretty much what happens, because the thoughts that come into our mind in the thought stream are not even necessarily consistent. They go one way and then they might tell us to go another way. They think one thing and then they might think the opposite. They can be all over the place, and especially in a time of change, when the mind is spinning around and around at different possibilities and trying to land somewhere. First it lands on some decision, and then the next day it might land on a completely different decision. And so people get very confused when they give their power over to the thought stream to determine their life choices. It's a terrible guide. It doesn't have wisdom. How could thoughts have wisdom? They're just conditioning. They're just programming. That isn't where our innate wisdom lies. Our innate wisdom lies in the subtle presence of who we are. And it arises through our intuition, through knowings, through insight, through urges to move in certain directions, through our joy. That is the wise guidance that needs to run our life. It's just that it's more subtle, and we're programmed to believe that the guidance in our thoughts is true. People are at the mercy of their programming, usually until it causes so much suffering that they stop and take a look at what's going on. Suffering wakes people up out of the programming, and that is grace. Suffering is the divine self sending a message. Look at what your thoughts are doing to you and to others. So life is that benevolent. It shows us through suffering where we've gone astray and tries to set us right by giving us a sense of joy and inspiration to follow instead of the thoughts. So we naturally would want to go in a direction of joy instead of suffering. So suffering is the stick that moves us, hopefully, towards joy. But sometimes we need a lot of stick. And then there can be a sense that it's not okay to move towards joy. A belief like that is going to keep you really stuck in the egoic mind. And unfortunately, most people do have a sense that somehow following their joy is self-indulgent or untrustworthy. How to stop believing your thoughts. What makes not believing something possible is seeing that it isn't worth believing. If a belief or other thought is beneficial, then it's worth keeping. However, once you begin examining your thoughts more closely, you won't find many worth keeping. You'll discover that your beliefs and other thoughts are of very limited or no value, and often quite detrimental, as so many are untrue. The funny thing about thoughts is they seem so true, even when they aren't. How can that be? And why would that be? The answer is your thoughts are programmed to be believable for the purpose of creating an illusory self. This self couldn't exist if you didn't find your thoughts irresistible and believable. The illusory self is the thought-based, mind-created self. It is just images of you, the you that you imagine yourself to be, and the you that the voice in your head seems to be. This illusory self is what I've been calling the false self, and for a good reason. It's an imposter self. It is part of your programming, but not the entirety of it, but not the entirety of it by any means. At a certain point in your evolution, you start seeing through the false self, and it begins to dissolve and loosen its hold. Before then, however, the false self serves evolution by creating suffering and delivering certain lessons. So we are meant to have this false self. It is programmed into every human being to believe they are the thoughts, the I thoughts that run through their mind. And it's programmed into every human being to believe their thought stream. If that weren't so, there wouldn't be a false self, but the false self serves our evolution. We get to pretend for a while that we're a suffering somebody who needs these various desires in order to be happy. And that makes the world go round. We go after our desires, and those desires deliver certain lessons. And then we learn by our choices to make better choices, and we evolve to becoming wiser, and we eventually begin to see that there's something else here besides our thoughts that is trustworthy, but this can take many, many lifetimes, of course. But it's important, I think, to realize that there's nothing wrong with the false self. It serves evolution. And so there's nothing wrong with other people following their false self either, because they are learning the lessons they need to learn. And when it's time to wake up from the false self, then they will do that. The insight, the teachings that they need will arise within them, or the suffering will become so great that they'll begin to look for answers. And of course, the answers are always available. They've always been available for humanity. It's one of the loving things about life, the benevolence of life allows for wise teachers to have always been on the planet, available to help others awaken. There have always been masters and great teachers who have helped those who are ready to awaken to do so. To be in the world, the divine self needs a costume. It needs a body-mind, a personality, drives, talents, tendencies, preferences, and some ego in order to play a role in the world and to function. All of this is accomplished through programming. You might be surprised to discover, however, that you don't need thoughts about yourself, your I thoughts, to be somebody or to be a functional human being. And that is a key point to this teaching, that although we need some ego to function, and people who are enlightened or awakened still have some functional ego, even though we have some ego, which is necessary, we don't need the thoughts in the thought stream in order to be a functional human being. The thoughts in your thought stream actually interfere with you being the best human being you can be. Those thoughts only seem to be helpful and seem to be true and seem to be you. So this idea that we don't need any thoughts in that thought stream, we don't need that mental commentary in order to function, to be safe, and to be happy, And in fact, it is those very things, those very thoughts that keep us from being happy and from being more functional and more fulfilled in our lives. So it's a pretty backwards world when we think that our thoughts are the things we need to be successful in our life. And in fact, they are actually what gets in our way and what someone who is very fulfilled and very happy is not attending to at all. You don't need the false mind-generated self. That programming is destined to go eventually, which is what the process of enlightenment is all about. The false self eventually dissolves to the extent that you stop identifying with your thoughts, while the character you're playing retains a personality with preferences, drives, inclinations, talents, some ego, and other essential programming or conditioning. You are here to experience being a human, to learn and grow, and to play a role in the drama on Earth at this time. Until now, the thoughts in your thought stream have been integral to this experience. The voice in your head has served your personal evolution as it was meant to. This voice has been responsible for the suffering that's been the grist for the mill of your evolution, and it's brought you to this teaching. However, it's likely that now, for you and for many, the voice in your head is no longer serving your evolution because you are ready for the divine self to incarnate more fully. 2,000 years ago, I came to demonstrate that divine incarnation was possible, as have many others before and since. And now it may be your turn. For many of you, this is possible within this lifetime. This is quite a powerful statement. To believe that it is possible in this lifetime for you to awaken or for you to embody more fully your divine self is a very important belief for you to have. Because believing the opposite can actually interfere with awakening. It is a true belief also that you can awaken or embody the divine self more fully. It is absolutely possible for each and every one of you to become more divine in this lifetime. And it's important for you to know that, to believe that, because then you will be able to tap into the willingness, the motivation, the courage, the strength that you need to go forward with that, to align with the divine self as much as possible. Because it does take a certain amount of effort and choice and will on your part to choose to be present instead of lost in your thoughts. In every moment, that choice is required. Will you be lost in thought? Or will you be here and now, present to this real experience that your divine self is having in this moment? It's your choice. And believing that it matters to make this choice, that making this choice will make a difference in your life and in the lives of others that you touch, believing this will give you the strength and the will and the courage to follow through on making this choice more and more frequently in more and more moments of your day. And eventually, you will get there. You are meant to be both human and divine. The drives, desires, dreams, fears, beliefs, and other thoughts in the thought stream provide lessons and some design and impetus for your human life. They give you an identity, something to do, and challenges to evolve and strengthen you. However, at some point, it's time for the thoughts in the thought stream to be shed and the human self to live more purely without those thoughts and the delusion and suffering they cause. It's time for the caterpillar to turn into a butterfly. This transformation results in a kinder, more compassionate, and happier human being. But you'll still be human, with the same personality and many of the same quirks, tendencies, preferences, drives, and even some of the same psychological issues. The programming that belongs to the costume serves a purpose and isn't meant to completely go away. However, once you realize your true nature, your relationship to that programming changes. You wear your costume more lightly, never forgetting your true identity, and follow your programming only when it's true to do so. Something wiser than the programming steps in and takes the programming's place much of the time. What is capable of discriminating how and when to apply the programming and how to move in the world is the divine self, the heart. Now let's return to how to become free of thoughts that don't serve you. If you believe a thought is serving you, you'll consciously or unconsciously reinforce it and have trouble disidentifying with it. However, once you stop believing a thought, it's only a matter of time before it drops away. Thoughts you don't believe won't remain in your mind. So assume that the thoughts in your mind are ones you still believe. And also assume they probably don't deserve to be believed. Become the skeptic when it comes to your thoughts. Stop trusting them. For that, you have to be committed to noticing your thoughts and willing to question them until you're thoroughly convinced that the entire thought stream has little value. You have to discover this about the thought stream for yourself through your own investigations. And that investigation entails just noticing thoughts and asking, is this true? And, you know, you really only have to investigate or examine thoughts that are the stickiest ones, the ones that catch you up. Those need the most examination. In many cases, you can simply notice a thought and turn your attention elsewhere without needing to examine it. Just turning your attention elsewhere will cause it to dissipate. Thoughts have a life of their own. They don't stay there forever. If you don't feed them with your attention, they'll just disappear. But the really sticky ones need some investigation, because if they're sticky, meaning they are strong and they produce feelings, it must mean that you believe them. So you have to inquire into them to undercut your belief in them. You have to see that they aren't actually true. So as I said, the thoughts that arise most frequently are the ones you believe most strongly. Those are the ones that will need the most investigation. The most frequent thoughts are also likely to have an emotional component, giving them power over how you think about yourself and how you behave. These are the types of thoughts that shape and control people's lives. Without serious investigation, they are unlikely to diminish significantly. These are also the thoughts that define the false self and limit you. Without them, you would still be the character you're meant to be, with the personality, drives, quirks, preferences, and talents of that character. But you'd be a happy character, not a miserable one. And you'd be a kind character, not an unkind one. the qualities of your divine self would shine through this character instead of being blocked by the false self. In other words, you'd be your best self. By not identifying with the thought stream, all you lose are images and ideas of a false self, not anything you ever needed to play the role you're meant to play in this life. So in detaching from the thought stream, you are still going to be the character you came here to be. You just won't be a suffering character. You'll still be the very unique person with the unique personality and talents that you have. But you'll be expressing those talents and personality in a very high and positive way instead of in a more negative way, which the ego often causes us to do. So you'll express the best self, the best personality style, the best of your drives, and your talents will unfold more fully and more fulfillingly also, because you'll be in touch with the wisdom of your true self, who has chosen those talents in order to serve in your life as the character. So your character has a personality and talents because it came here to fulfill a certain mission, a certain destiny. And if you don't listen to the thought stream, you will much more effectively fulfill that destiny that your character was created. Okay, I don't know why we're getting all this advertisement. Okay, I do not know why that ad happened in the middle of this, huh? Okay, well, I'll just start again. That was interesting. Once you've seen the uselessness and destructiveness of most of your thoughts, you can get beyond resisting them or being irritated by them by realizing one important thing. Your thoughts are not personal. They don't mean anything about you, the real you, that is. All of humanity has the same thoughts, and they're responsible for all the suffering in the world. Once you realize this, the only sensible response to egoic thoughts is accepting that they're part of life and having compassion for this very human challenge. If only this realization could be had simply by discovering this. Unfortunately, this realization usually takes time to sink in deeply. As your thoughts weaken and the ability to witness them develops, your thoughts become more impersonal. Once this happens, the impersonal nature of thought is much easier to see. Before then, you can remind yourself that your thoughts are not yours, and that will lay the groundwork for a deeper realization. So this is a good point, that initially your thoughts do seem very personal. They seem like they're yours. But the more you practice disengaging from your thoughts, the more distant they begin to be experienced by you. In other words, the more you practice disengagement from your thoughts, they become weaker, and they also seem to be not really yours. It's easier for you to see that they don't really belong to you, to see that they are just programming, just the human programming. So when you reach a certain point of disengagement with your thoughts, because you have practiced a lot of meditation and you've practiced turning away and disengaging from your thoughts, eventually they drop so far in the background that it becomes apparent that they aren't yours and they never were yours. They are clearly impersonal. So there's one other section that I'm going to include here just because I think that it is valuable to jump ahead a few pages and include this section. I did talk about this a little bit, but I'm going to read this anyway. The thoughts in your thought stream, the thoughts in your thought stream are not your friend. Seeing this can work against you, however, if it pits you against your thoughts. What you resist persists, and so resistance is not a useful stance. Thoughts are not the enemy, although once you realize the truth about them, it's natural to feel that way. However, only the ego could see anything as an enemy. An enemy is someone you fear, someone you believe has power over you. But thoughts are not to be feared, as they have no power over you if you don't believe them. Would you be afraid of a rope if you knew it was a rope and not a snake? The same is true of thoughts. They are what they are, an outmoded part of the human machinery. If you leave them alone, they'll go away. Leaving them alone is enough. Just don't touch them. This is easy enough to do if you don't believe that your thoughts mean anything about you, if you know they aren't really yours. The only way they could bother you is if you believe in the you they describe. To the extent that you believe in this you, there will be some reaction to your thoughts, either buying into them or being irritated that they still arise. Okay, to come back up here. This is easy enough to do if you don't believe that your thoughts mean anything about you, if you know they aren't really yours. The only way they could bother you is if you believed in the you they describe. To the extent that you believe in this you, there will be a reaction to your thoughts, either buying into them or being irritated that they still arise. So what to do? The answer is simple. Just notice. Notice the irritation, annoyance, or desire to be rid of thoughts. That isn't the real you that feels that way. The real you is loving this great adventure called life, including the challenge of having thoughts that are both entrancing and unwanted. What an interesting dilemma being human is. When you accept your thoughts and let them be, you drop into presence, where seeing the truth about them is much easier. When you accept your thoughts and let them be, you drop into presence, where seeing the truth about them is much easier. You can see there is a catch-22 here. You need some distance from thoughts before you can be objective enough to see the truth about them and detach from them completely. This distance develops over time, and there's only so much you can do to develop this. Daily meditation speeds this along like nothing else because it teaches you to notice thoughts. Meditation develops the noticer because meditation brings you into presence, which is what notices and experiences life. Okay, I'm not going to press my luck and try to talk anymore. I do not know why those ads came on, but maybe you know why that, maybe somebody knows how to stop that from happening. I think I will I want to mention again that if anybody does have any questions that they would like me to answer at some point in the next teaching session or at some point, you can email me at gina@radicalhappiness.com. That's Gina, G-I-N-A, at radicalhappiness.com. And I will just address them in one of our sessions. So, okay, is there somebody there that I can... okay, I'm going to... Oh, it says I think you have to upgrade to a paid account. Is that why the... That's why the... okay, I'm going to switch the mic off, and then you can tell me what happened. I guess I need to upgrade to a paid account.